This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Welcome back to our weekly series on inequality, The Lines Between Us. We've spent several weeks looking at ways the criminal justice system perpetuates inequality. The percentage of minorities in our prisons is far greater than in the overall population. And critics say that disparity results partly from strategies used by police. Beyond that, perceptions of unfair policing in some neighborhoods make it difficult for police to get people who live there to cooperate in working against crime. Baltimore Police Commissioner Anthony Batts has established a new unit focusing on community partnerships. He put Lieutenant Colonel Melvin Russell in charge of the division. We'll talk to him in just a couple minutes. First, a story from the streets of Northeast Baltimore. A few weeks ago, you met Audio Video, a hip-hop producer who talked to us about a song he wrote criticizing Baltimore's blue light police cameras. While he was here, he also shared this story about a run-in he had with the Baltimore police.
Well, I was in the Army, and I just finished boot camp, and I came home. And I went into my homeboy's house over Northeast, and we was outside talking, and I was telling them stories about boot camp, and, you know, they were telling me about everything that was happening in Baltimore. So a knocker comes rolling down, and this is an unmarked car with two partners and two police officers. I gave my homeboy a dap, and I got in the car, and here comes this knocker, and he says, "Woohoo, blood's up, blood gang, yada, da, da, da." And I shake my head and I mug, and he said, "I don't like that face." So we got out the car and just made it in his mind that he's gonna ruin my night because he wanted to mess with somebody that night. But all it took was a handshake that I give my partners at work, and a handshake that I give my master sergeant at the time. Yeah, a simple handshake that's universally known. And now I'm blood gang, I'm this, I'm that. So they get out the car, they make me get out the car, they search me. And they ask me where I'm from. And I said, I'm a soldier. I just came home from boot camp. I don't have a mailing address right now. I have to get assigned to my unit. And he said, "That's not what I asked you. I asked you where you from." So I said, "I'm from right here in Baltimore, from Northwest Side." "Well, what you doing around here, soldier? You know how to answer an officer when he's talking to you." So it kind of pissed me off because it's like, I'm a soldier. I'm sacrificing my time and I'm sacrificing my life for you to treat my community like this. Now that I'm back home, I'm in civilian clothes. I'm not in my uniform. And you're treating me like this, even after I already identified myself as a soldier. That means my life doesn't mean two to you. It doesn't mean two shits to you. It kind of angered me, so I cursed them out. I said some things I wasn't supposed to say. I said, "F*** you, pig. You know what I mean? You ain't gonna respect this motherfucking flag on my uniform. I ain't gonna respect the motherfucking flag on yours." And he started to argue with me. He started to get bucking loud, and his partner held him back. And, you know what I mean, after they searched me, I said, "Are you going to arrest me or not? Because you ain't find nothing on me. As soon as I get back to my base, I'm going to have one of my lawyers on you." I asked him for his badge number and everything. He wouldn't give it to me. So it's bullying, for real, because you got to look at how they treat other people that's not even committing real crime, just to catch one or two people. I could have been the 30th person that day that he came off to screaming, "Blood gang, woo, woo, so whoop," and treating me like that, like I'm some gang member, just because I'm in that neighborhood that time when he's rolling down the street. You know, in the Army, I could respect the drill sergeant that's teaching me how to do combat. He can call me a maggot, he can call me this, he can call me that. I know the purpose behind that. But a police officer telling me that and treating me like that, and you ain't got no professionalism about you, you know, you just talking real sloppy, cursing at me and stuff, you know. It was a white and a black cop, partners. It's that badge that makes them feel like they're better. That's a whole new race. That's a whole new brotherhood.
Hip-hop producer Audio Video, that's with two D's in each name. This is The Lines Between Us on Maryland Morning, WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. With me now to talk about police-community relations is Baltimore Police Lieutenant Colonel Melvin Russell, who heads the department's Community Partnerships Unit. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sheila. Thank you for having me.
What's your reaction to Audio Video's story?
You know, it's grievous, it's sad, but to be quite transparent and honest with you, not surprising. Not surprising. Because let me say this first and foremost. I love this Baltimore Police Department, this uniform I wear. And quite frankly, the vast majority of officers that don this uniform are great officers, are professional officers. But I'd be naive and I'd be telling a falsity if I told you that there weren't some officers that maybe shouldn't be officers or need to be retrained. And unfortunately, it's that few officers that give us a terrible, terrible name. You know, my son's had these same run-ins. I've had run-ins, even as being a police officer, being a police sergeant, you know, in uniform. I mean, in plain clothes. So I know it's out there. I know we have some officers that give a bad name to all. So again, very sad, very grievous, but not surprising. And I just pray that we're able to change the culture, not just of our communities, but also our police officers.
What kind of run-ins would you as an off-duty police officer
have? Well, I can remember. This is some years back, and this has been going on since pretty much my entire career. You either hear it or you're a part of it. I can remember back, and I want to say this was the late 80s, early 90s. I can remember, and I used to drive and most people that knew me knew are going to know this. I used to drive a black BMW, blacked out, dark tinted. And I can remember when I first purchased it, I was getting stopped all the time, profile. And so it got to the point when I changed my tags and I had vanity tags, suspect. So I had suspect on my BMW.
Did that increase it or did that?
Well, initially it increased it, but after a while, every police officer knew that was Mel Russell's BMW, so don't stop that car. But I can remember one night and I was driving and this officer clearly didn't know it was my vehicle, not that he should. But it was a profile stop, and he came off very hostile, cussing at me. I had my 3-year-old baby boy in the car with me, just came from a revival church service, and I asked him politely, could you stop screaming and cursing and tell me why you're stopping me? And this kid was such a racist and such a bigot, he literally tried to begin to yank me out of the car, and I jumped out of the car quickly, and, you know, he reached for his gun, and his partners recognized and said, hey, called his name and said, that's Sergeant Russell. And he turned white as a ghost, but by then he was so escalated that he couldn't come down. So he sat me down on the curb, made me sit down on the curb, made me get my 3-year-old baby boy out of the car, sat us on the curb, proceeded to write a couple of tickets. But quite frankly, that didn't go anywhere. Long story short, he was one of those bad officers and he ended up getting fired. But I'm a police officer, but what do you do when you're not a police officer?
Well, let me add another dimension to this, because you've been talking about cases that you say are isolated cases.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
There's a new ACLU report out that says blacks were 5.6 times more likely than whites to be arrested for marijuana possession in Baltimore City in 2010, the most recent statistics they had. What do you think is behind that disparity? I mean, we're talking about 6,400 arrests versus 555 arrests.
I got you. Listen, if we're going to be totally honest, there's still a lot of, people don't want to talk about, there's still a lot of racism, there's still a lot of prejudice involved, and there's still even that amongst our officers. Again, talking about those few officers. Now, you would say, well, how could it be a few officers? Because look at the statistics, or look how out of balance that is. But I quite frankly think that we look at too many will look at an African-American young man on the corner and then see an Anglo man on the corner and look at them differently. An African-American man might automatically be assumed to be looked upon negatively, stereotyped, so forth and so on. This is a problem for our community. This is a problem for me as a cop on my beat. And maybe I come along a Anglo young man and I may not think negatively about him. I may think, well, why is he smoking marijuana? I may give him a break. You know, I mean, that's just, listen, if we're going to be plain and we're going to be simple and we're going to talk honesty, then we need to look at that and openly admit that. And that goes on. That goes on.
So what do you do about it?
Well, we got to change the culture of our police department as well as the culture of our communities. And that's where I hope I come into play and I'm able to help change that culture.
Some people say the overrepresentation of minorities in prisons can be tied to policing strategies. A couple of months ago, we talked to ACLU Maryland lawyer David Rocha.
Mm-hmm.
in wealthier, whiter parts of Baltimore, the policing happens one way, and in poorer African American parts of Baltimore, policing happens in very different ways. In certain parts of Baltimore, you are much more likely to be not only stopped and frisked, but arrested for minor petty offenses that simply wouldn't even attract police attention in other communities. And it's one important way in which our society simply treats certain parts of our community as a community to be policed rather than a community to be served.
So again, going beyond the image of individual incidents to how it looks to different communities, is that perception of different policing in different communities accurate?
I believe David is spot on. I believe he's spot on. I believe that, and you know what, you know, I wear another hat sometimes. Well, I always wear it, but I'm also an assistant pastor. And I could just remember just preaching maybe 2 weeks ago, and this was part of my sermon, you know, because I was talking to a large police crowd and talking about how, why is it that the makeup of a community, the medium income of a community, the gender of a community, the race of a community dictates how we police, dictates whether we speak in a professional manner or a degrading manner. And, you know, again, we could say that's not how it is, but let me ask you this question, or ask any of our audience out there. Do you feel safer walking through Roland Park and to be engaged by a police officer? I mean, how do you think that engagement might go? As opposed to walking in a predominantly black neighborhood, maybe with the crime rate that's high, and now engaging a police officer, do you think that police officer engagement episode would go a lot different? And I think everybody would agree. I think everybody would agree. I'm probably going to be dealt with a lot more respectfully, with a lot more dignity, more like a human being in an influential, maybe Anglo neighborhood, as opposed to a impoverished African-American neighborhood. I'm going to be dealt with a little bit different. And that's a problem, because it should be equality across the board. No matter what you look like, what neighborhood you're in, everybody should be dealt with and respected as a human being. Everybody should be dealt with the same, no matter where I am in the city. But again, if we're going to be honest, let's be honest.
So what is the police department doing about, you've talked about need to change the culture. What are people learning in the academy, for example?
I'll just give you what worked for me 7 months ago when I was still the commanding officer of the Eastern District, which is predominantly all African American, which is one of the most impoverished areas, if not the most impoverished area, and violent in the city of Baltimore. And so I got the complaints in of seniors being cursed out by my officers, you know. Not all officers, but I had a handful of officers. And so I thought, why not put pastors in the cars with these officers? So then we began to put them in the car with my problematic officers. In other words, while you're rolling around in a roving confession box, it is difficult to treat people and say anything you want to people, because you have this angel, if you will, watching everything you're doing. Right? So they started to tighten up. They started to speak more professional. They started to be more respectful to the communities.
Does that behavior stick, or does that only work while the pastor is physically there?
Just like anything, you need to develop a habit. So this wasn't a one-time hit and miss. I kept them in the car, right? So I had enough dedicated and committed pastors that I was able to put them in the car almost all the time, 3-4 times a week.
In your district?
They were committed because they knew the concept was to change the mindset of these pastors. I made my officers walk into the communities. When these communities were walking, I made them walk with the communities, and not just walk with them, but engage them. You know, I want you to tell these community members why you became a police officer in the first place, why you like policing. And at the same time, I want these community members to be able to talk to you and be frank about it. We love how you police this way in our community, but you know what? We also hate when you just jump out on the corners on our young African-American little brothers and sisters and sons, and you just treat them any kind of way and you degrade them in whatever way that means. So that began to shape and reshape my officers. You didn't hear them cursing as much. You saw some officers stop cursing altogether. You know, so we began. I remember one of my officers coming back to me I said, you know, Major, back then, Major, I really fought against what you was trying to do. And I fought against these pastors. I fought about how you're saying, let's just be more engaging with the community and not just prejudge them. I really fought against that because I thought I knew how to police best. But I realized that you were right. Now, I don't want you to be upset with me because my arrests have dropped way down. And the reason my arrests have dropped way down is because I've learned to talk to people in the area that I'm patrolling. And the reason my numbers went down is because now when crime happens, because I talk to them, these same individuals, now when things go down in my neighborhood, whether it be a burglary or robbery, they give me information where before they weren't going to tell me anything.
This is The Lines Between Us on WIPR on Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Baltimore Police Lieutenant Colonel Melvin Russell about police-community relations. You just described this powerful tool you used in the Eastern District.
One of them, right.
Ride-ons with pastors. You are now heading the new unit that Commissioner Batt set up.
Community Partnership Division.
Community Partnerships. This sounds like a partnership.
Absolutely.
Are you going to do it citywide?
That's the goal. That's the charge. We were very fortunate in East Baltimore. First 3 years in, we cut violent crime in half. So homicides went in half. Shootings went in half. So it was just tremendous. And even today, because we worked with partnerships, one of the things I realized early on, there's no way in the world that I was going to reduce crime by myself, meaning police department only. I needed partners. I needed help. So we went to our partners in the community. Listen, if you're a shareholder at the time of East Baltimore, whether you work, play, live there, we came to you. Worship there, we came to you. So, residents, we wanted your help. Business owners, we wanted your help. Educators, we wanted your help. Pastors, we wanted your help. Did we tell them to pin on badges, become deputies, police officers? No, we didn't do that. But we just asked them to do their part, to be the block watchers that they should be. So we've asked the pastors and congregations, you know what? You should know you have a domestic violence house 2 doors down from the church. And you should be helping us to get rid of that because it's not right that Keisha's getting her butt whipped, right? Every Friday night by black. You should know you have a crack house, but just not the churches. I don't want to just badmouth the churches. The businesses need to do that. They need to learn to give back to the communities rather than just take resources out of the community, especially in the impoverished communities. They need to learn to give back.
What is the biggest barrier to improving relations between police and the community?
Just communication. And I always get back to the engagement. Again, when I came up, I was telling a story yesterday morning. I had the misfortune, but it was my pleasure. I had to eulogize one of my first partners when I came on. Mm. And we told a story while we were speaking to the family and to all those in attendance. We talked about how when we first came up and with my first partner, God bless him, Anthony Bakakis, Sergeant Bakakis. We talked about how one of the times we were just walking through the communities. And back then we didn't have radios strapped to us. The radios were in the cars. Yeah, I'm pretty old. And so we remembered, I told a story how we all, we were getting shot at and we all dove into a snowbank. But because we had relationships with the communities, we couldn't get to our car to call the police, to call for backup. But the neighbors picked up the phone. And I was brand new back then. But I was walking with two veteran officers, Anthony Bakakis and Carl Guppelit. And the neighbors got on the phone and said, you better send some more police around here because Carl and Tony are getting shot at. And they got this other kid with them. I don't know who that is, but they're getting shot. And so it was the neighbors that called backup for us. There was a time when we engaged. We knew everybody in the community. We got out of the car. So that's why we have initiatives coming up. Like, we want all of our police officers, whenever a community is walking, whenever a church is doing prayer walks, whenever there's a movement of people going through your area that you're responsible for, park your car. And the commissioner's been so gracious to this, so he has agreed. Park your car and you walk that 45 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour with that community, and you engage that community. Because it's really hard to start building a relationship with a community and then going back in your car and disrespecting them the next day. Because now you know them. You start to build up communications, right? It's really hard. So we're excited about that. We're building out initiatives like Coffee with a Cop, right? We want to build that all over the city where community members in their local cafes, Dunkin' Donuts, or wherever a businessman say, yeah, come here, and we can engage our police officers and have an honest dialogue. We love you in our community, and we're here to support you. Thank you for doing a great job. And if there's a but, then there's a but. But We don't like when you do this in our community. We don't like when you the way you speak to us about this. And for the officers to be able to receive that, and even at the same time, maybe mention some things back. You know what? I get upset as a police officer because every time somebody gets shot around here, there's 50 people on the street, and we can't get one witness. And once, until we start dialoguing and communicating, we're not going to see a difference.
You make it sound pretty doable.
It is doable.
But
it is doable.
But then why is it falling apart? I mean,
it's not falling
apart. It can't
be
as easy as you're making it sound.
I say it is. You just got to be committed to it, and you got to stay with it. And the reason I say it's doable, because we already did it in East Baltimore. And I'm not saying I didn't get my butt whipped sometimes over there with the crime. You know, but when you look at the totality of it, every year crime dropped. Every year the violence dropped. Because people started to get engaged. Because the officers started warming up with the pastors that were riding with them. They started getting out of the cars and talking to the community members. They started talking to the business owners, and they started to enjoy it. We started doing officer appreciation, not one time a year. Oh, wonderful, that's great. But we started doing them every month, right? We had the community come in and serve them, and the officers loved it. And once you start building the dynamics of this, these are real people that I'm protecting and serving, and I know their stories, I'm telling you, I am simply telling you, it is difficult to not be a great officer.
Lieutenant Colonel Melvin Russell, head of the Baltimore Police Department's Community Partnerships Division. We have to break now for news, but when we come back, we'll continue our conversation and hear what he has to say about the community end of police-community relations.
Everything I heard was, we call the police, we call city council, we call the mayor's office. And here's what I say to the community, what are you doing? Because listen, we're not going to get many more police officers. Use the power that you have.
That's when The Lines Between Us returns. On 88.1, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. Stick around.
I'm Assistant Producer Jamila Kay. You're listening to Maryland Morning's The Lines Between Us series on WYPR 88.1 in Baltimore. Visit our website, linesbetweenus.org, to hear more stories, to see maps that reveal the lines in your neighborhood, and to participate in the discussion. Thanks for downloading this week's show. Now back to the podcast.
On WYPR, I'm Sheila Cass. This is Maryland Morning. Welcome back to The Lines Between Us. We're continuing now our conversation about police-community relations with Lieutenant Colonel Melvin Russell of the Baltimore Police. He heads the department's Community Partnerships Unit. Earlier, we talked about the distrust that can grow in neighborhoods when police treat black residents differently than white residents.
Too many will look at an African-American young man on the corner and then see an Anglo man on the corner and look at them differently. This is a problem for our community. This is a problem for me as a cop on my beat.
While some argue poor black neighborhoods are over-policed, some people in those neighborhoods say they don't see enough of the police. Monique Washington Alston is president of the Edmondson Village Community Association. She told our producer, Lawrence Lanahan, she's tired of the drug dealing in her West Baltimore neighborhood.
I'm going to be honest with you, as a community leader, I just want it cleared off the corner. For one, you know, and I'm going to be honest with you, if you go to certain communities, it's just not allowed. So why is it being allowed to, you know, continue in certain communities? That's my whole issue. You know, you have individuals coming out of their community into our communities to buy this product or buy these illegal substances. But when you go to their community, the police is immediately called and the police immediately respond. It's almost frustrating for us as community leaders because we make the calls, we reach out to our council people, we reach out to the mayor's office, and it's like, you know, you're just not getting a quicker response. You're asking community leaders to relay certain information to you, but there's like this lack of response, and that's what I don't understand.
Ms. Washington Alston complains of under-policing, others of over-policing. I asked Lieutenant Colonel Russell how he walks that line.
I'm going to flip the script, as they say. Monique, use the power that you have. Because everything, and I love you, Monique, but everything I heard was, we call the police, we call city council, we call the mayor's office. And here's what I say to the communities. What are you doing? Because, listen, we're not going to get many more police officers. Depending on the geographical area of where you live, you're going to see more police officers compared to less police officers, also depending on the crime that you have going on. And I could use for an example, we had several what we call open air markets. It sounds like that's what she has, an open air drug market, right? And I don't care how often we responded, because it was an open air drug market and well organized by the drug dealers, they were going to always be there, right? There's but so much a patrol officer in a uniform in a police car can do, especially when they're going to see you with the system they have in place from blocks away coming. And
well, she seems to be making the point, though, that there are communities in which an open-air drug market would never be allowed to flourish.
Well, here's what I'm saying. This is how you get rid of it. Let's talk about the solution, right? So it doesn't flourish. I challenge the communities, help us get rid of these open-air drug markets. So we had two major open-air drug markets in East Baltimore, two major open-air drug markets, and we challenged the communities. And they were so frustrated, because there'll come a point in time where you get sick and tired of being sick and tired. Said, fine, Major, we'll work with you. They began to come out of their homes. They trusted enough not to be afraid and come out of their homes. The churches, who were calling us all the time, get rid of the drug dealers, get rid of the drug dealers. I said, you know what? You've got 100 men in your churches. Help me get rid of them.
So are you saying that residents should confront the dealers?
No, that's not what I'm saying. That's not. No, no, no.
What are you saying?
Never confronting. I just said visibility. Visibility. Visibility is such a powerful, powerful tool. So those communities started coming out in the dozens. The churches, membership started coming out.
Just
coming out and walking up and down the street. Even speaking to the drug dealers, just as they spoke to the good people. And their visibility, speaking to them. Because the drug dealers knew that everybody knew they were drug dealers. And so just speaking to them, and staying in ever presence, and not just any old time, but the times they were out there. I had communities doing shifts. And you know what happened? Those open air drug markets went away. And in between, the police officers were able to make more effective arrests, because now you had people in the community that were out walking, not confronting, but now able to take information mentally down, call the police later, and say, this is how they're running their operation. This is where they're keeping their drugs. Pookie is the one that's running the show. He sits over here because they were in their communities, which belonged to them. So now they were able to give us more timely intelligence. So now they work closer with the police. So because we went in partnership, we got rid of open-air drug markets.
And nobody in the community got hurt?
Nobody got hurt. And that's something I had to combat for probably a year in my community. And I'm not going to talk about the family, because God bless them. God rest their soul. But one of the things I bought, well, let me just say it. You know, a lot of people bring up the Dawson family.
Yeah.
You know, the firebomb. And I used to hear that all the time. I'm not getting my house firebombed. We're not belittling what happened and saying it didn't happen. But the thing I've told every community member I went in, how many other times have you seen firebombs? That was such a rarity that it made not news just around the city. It made national and even international news.
And it's part of why we all think about it when you tell a story like
that's
this.
That's correct. I tell them that's not going to happen again. Now, I can't promise them that, but I tell them that's not going to happen again. And if you're going to be paralyzed by something that happened well over 10 years ago and hasn't happened since, then we lost the war. And you know what? 5 years later, I ain't had one firebomb. 5 years later, I haven't had one person had a rock thrown through their window. 5 years later, I haven't had one person beat up. Listen, partner with the Baltimore City Police Department, and we can make any community safe. I just believe that with everything in me. Listen, if we did it in 12 square mile radius, I don't know why we can't do it citywide. I'm just crazy enough to believe we could do it citywide. Because they're great people, but they're no different than any other part of the residents in the Baltimore City.
When should I start expecting to see results?
You're seeing it now. Listen, look at the Western District. Western District started off on fire this year. Homicides and shootings, getting tore up. Look at Western District. Am I saying the violence stopped? No, it hasn't stopped. But it's slowing down, and it slowed down a lot since the community start engaging over there, since Councilman Nick Mosby start doing his regular walks, since communities are coming out and doing things that they weren't doing before. Just be visible, come out, and look like you care about your community, and you'd be surprised of the byproducts that happen. Crime will reduce.
That's Baltimore Police Lieutenant Colonel Melvin Russell here on The Lines Between Us on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about police-community relations. On Monday, you'll be part of a conversation at the Enoch Pratt Central Library titled Racial Differences in Arrests: Are Community Police Partnerships a Solution? Disclosure, that event is hosted by one of the funders of this series, the Open Society Institute Baltimore. Your partner in conversation at that Pratt Library event Monday night will be UCLA Social Psychology Assistant Professor Philip Goff. He's the research director for the Consortium for Police Leadership in Equity. They work with police departments to root out racial bias. The consortium makes several recommendations. Some of them are finding ways to identify officers likely to do biased policing, developing training to reduce biased policing, and figuring out evidence-based police practices that root out bias. What is the Baltimore police doing to root out bias?
Well, I can't speak for the entire department. Let me just say this. It's not accepted, number one, right? And it's up to every supervisor in the agency. If you have a bad officer, let me just say this. If you have an officer that's not hitting all the professional points, you find that he's being there's racial disparity. I mean, you could tell when you have a bad seat or he's off tilted a little bit.
How? How do you tell?
Well, I mean, you just can't. I mean, complaints come in, you know. Everybody can't be telling a tale, right?
I think we mentioned earlier that the perception of bias can be as damaging to police relations in the community as actual bias. What do you do, what can you do to present evidence to the community that there's not bias?
You just make a plea to the community, and you do it the right way. And again, I keep going back to the Eastern District. I remember coming in and saying, this is what we're going to do in this community. I know we have some issues on both sides of the fence, but we're going to fix it, and we're going to work together as partners. Ah, Major, we heard that before. We ain't trying to hear that. You know what? We've been hearing this rhetoric for years. We don't like the police. We know y'all don't like us. And I said, please, do me a favor. I don't know who came before. I'm not here to prejudge them, but give me an opportunity. I'm telling you, since I have the helm, these officers will be different. I don't know what the commander did before me, but I will be different, and I will be accountable to you.
Now that you're in a citywide position, how will you know if things are getting better, aside from just how it feels to you, which is important? But what can you look at as sort of evidence if it's getting better?
Well, listen, for me, everything is grassroots. You know, everything is, you got to be out there to hear, you got to have the pulse of the people. So just like we did in East Baltimore, I've got to expand those relationships and build out those relationships that are probably, and in many areas, are missing. And they are. So, you know, we started in West Baltimore, and we're not finished in West Baltimore, and we'll continue to spread out throughout the city. We realized when we got to West Baltimore, man, nobody over here is walking. There's no churches engaging, and forgive me, but there's no churches out here coming out into the community on a regular basis, because we demand that in East Baltimore. You know, you're not going to sit back and just complain about it and just wait for us to come in and be the cavalry. We don't live here 24/7. Yes, we're paid to protect and serve, but if you really want to see a change, you've got to partner with us. That's all I'm saying to you. If you want to see a real change, stop waiting on us to do everything and partner with us, and I promise you'll see a change. So we find ourselves now doing that all over again. Listen, Nick Mosby, Councilman Nick Mosby, he grabbed hold of this so quick. God bless Nick Mosby. He's supposed to do it for 7 weeks. He led up a prayer walks, community walks, and started off with probably about, I don't know, we had maybe 20, 30 people out there. And today, Nick Mosby, because of his leadership, his wife, Berlin, is out there with him. He's got over 200 people, churches and people that go out every Friday night and walk through the community. So his 7 weeks has now turned out what he says right now, we're going to do it through the end of summer. I got a feeling he's not going to stop. So he's doing a great job. You get 200 people walking through a community, people start sitting back and go, whoa, what's going on in our community? And the reason they're growing is because, not because he's bringing more people in from the outside, because community members are saying, I want to be a part of this. This is my community. I'm going to walk with you guys next week.
Do you really expect that in every community in Baltimore?
Any community that wants to have a real change, want to see some safety, want to see a cleaner, healthier community, I'm simply saying yes. If you would just put aside your fears and partner with the police department, city agencies, because it's not just us. It's all about being visible.
Good luck.
No good luck needed. It's going to happen. But thank you. I'll take that shield.
Thank you. Thank you. Lieutenant Colonel Melvin Russell is head of the Baltimore Police Department's Community Partnerships Unit. On Monday, Lieutenant Colonel Russell will speak at the Enoch Pratt Central Library downtown, an event hosted by the Open Society Institute Baltimore. It's called Racial Differences in Arrests: Are Community Police Partnerships a Solution? Joe Jones, director of the Center for Urban Families, whom you may have heard a couple weeks ago on The Lines Between Us, will moderate. The other speaker will be Philip Goff, a social psychologist from UCLA whose Consortium for Police Leadership Inequity works with police departments to root out racial bias. Details about the event are at linesbetweenus.org. On 88.1, I'm Sheila Cass. That's it for The Lines Between Us today. Thanks for joining us today on Maryland Morning. Have a great weekend.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Lines Between Us, WYPR's year-long exploration of inequality in the Baltimore region. This is Maryland Morning senior producer Lawrence Lanahan. Now, join the conversation at facebook.com/thelinesbetweenus. Or tell us your story at linesbetweenus.org. The Lines Between Us is made possible by grants from Associated Black Charities, Cohen Opportunity Fund, Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation, Baltimore Community Foundation, and Open Society Institute Baltimore, as well as support from members of the WYPR Board of Directors. I hope you'll join us again on Friday at 9 a.m. on 88.1 FM in the Baltimore region, and everywhere else, streaming live at WYPR.org. Have a great day.